Okay, the tape is rolling. I gotta admit that when it came to talking to you and Ronald Shannon Jackson, between a couple friends of mine in the radio station, we had more recorded material by Ronald Shannon.
Yeah.
There's more available, and a lot of your records are out of print.
Right.
So could I ask you, mostly for the benefit of my listening audience and of myself too, to talk about some of your career before you dropped out for a while in the late 70s?
The great dropout, right?
Yeah, and I'd like to ask you about that, because there's kind of a big vacuum, kind of like when Miles Davis dropped out. Nobody really knows what happened.
Okay, now what do you want to know first? Why I dropped out, or what was happening during that time?
Well, both.
Okay. Now, the reason I dropped out was to get myself together and to play better music. I wasn't happy with what I was doing. I had, in the 60s, like, you know, from 65 on, when I first got to New York, I had started building some things. And by the mid-70s, I found myself doing things, but I wasn't quite sure of where it was going. I knew it wasn't going where I wanted it to go. And so I moved back to my hometown of Ossining. I left New York City, moved back here, and for about 3 or 4 years, I just worked on my music, worked on my playing and my music. In essence, I wanted to learn how to really play what I was hearing, you know? And then and during that time, though, I was doing some small tours with a trio that I put together and a quartet. I toured Europe, a few small tours in Europe. And I did work with material in the early part of that time, quite a bit. But there was very little recording. So that's what was happening during that time.
Okay, could you tell me about some of the people we were playing with? And I do have some of the material recordings, at least memory serves.
Yeah, well, that's the only one I did with them.
Okay, could you tell me, I did read an article that says that you played gigs with them for about a year before that album. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Right.
And some of the other people you played with?
Well, we were doing a lot of club gigs in New York. It was my first experience with the rock club scene in New York, Hurrahs and Danceteria, and all of the Mud Club, all of the so-called hip clubs of the time. And so I was doing those things with material with my own bands. I was playing, I did a gig at CBGB's. That was like the main New York gig. And I did some other gigs around New York. And then mainly in Europe, I was touring in France quite a bit, a couple of German things. And that's what I was doing. The guys I were playing with, the trio was Ken Buchanan on bass and Levander Cope on drums at that point. And then I changed to a quartet with Ken Buchanan still on bass, Mitch Rothschild on keyboards, and Andy Potter on drums. And I did a record with the trio that I'm glad to say isn't available here in the States. It was a French record called Dance With Me Montana. And it's pretty bad. But, you know, it's the beginning of what I'm doing now. Was when I first started to put the music together and I could first hear the way I wanted to go. But it's a very rough album, you know.
Okay, I've read that you started playing with Pharoah Sanders and people like that. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, that was when I first got to New York in 65. I did my first gig with a name band with the African drummer Olatunji. And fortunately, he was using a lot of the musicians, well, almost entirely the musicians from Sun Ra's band, such as Pat Patrick and Ronnie Boykins was with the band, Marshall Allen. And so I started doing a few gigs with Olatunji and those guys, and I got to know the guys from Sun Ra's band. I did a couple of gigs with John Gilmore and a couple of other people, and I started to work around. I had been in Berklee School of Music in 61 with Byard Lancaster and Dave Burrell and these people, and Byard had a band. He was in New York but working out of Philly, and I joined his band, and due to that, we did a gig in Philly, and Pharoah came and sat in, and I started working with Pharoah the next night at Slug, so that's how that came about. And shortly after that, I did the recording, and by that time, I was, you know, pretty well entrenched in the New York scene. You know, at least the avant-garde New York scene.
Which albums did you play with Pharoah?
On the Tao Hid album, that was recorded in 60. That was his first album for Impulse. And I think up to that time he had done one album for ESP. So I guess it was like his second album, as far as I know. And we did the Tao Hid album. Dave Burrell, Roger Blank, Henry Grimes. And then I did an album with Byard Lancaster Group, It's Not Up to Us, and an album on ESP with Marzette Watson, and then started recording around New York. There's one album that was never released with Elvin Jones, Byard Lancaster, Dave Burrell, and Cyrone on bass that I did was never released. Alan Douglas has the tapes. I don't know whatever happened to that. But there are a lot of things like that, you know, around the New York scene, albums.
Okay. The Sonny Sharrock sound and style of playing is unique among guitarists and all types of music. How did you develop your unique sound, and what are your influences?
Well, I developed it by listening to saxophone players and drummers. It's got nothing to do with guitar, actually. If you know much about the period, when I first came to New York, like 65, if you listen to guitar at that point, and not that they're not good guitarists and good musicians, but I mean, you're talking about like Kenny Burrell on one side and Johnny Smith on the other side, going from a very exact ballad thing to a kind of bluesy ballad thing, but all very laid back and sedate in its way. And I was influenced by Coltrane, Albert Eiler, Ornette Coleman, and the drummers, Sonny Murray, Elvin Jones, and people like that. And I wanted to bring that kind of playing to the guitar, and there was no one else doing it. I couldn't play a saxophone. I wanted to play something. I played guitar. And so I tried to bring that feeling and that way of playing to the guitar. And that's how I developed what I do.
For you, I'd like to ask you a little bit about Last Exit now.
Yeah.
How do you, when I asked Ronald and I asked him about the compositional structure, he described it as eating as a dinner where you first eat your main course and you finish up with the dessert. I was wondering how you approach Last Exit as not as a compositional structure, but as a improvisational structure.
Okay. Well, it was formed as an improvisational band. And I was, that's how I came up in the 60s in New York, playing free music, playing in improvisational bands. So for me, getting into that structure was very easy. And it was just, I have no preconceived ideas about what I'm going to do with Last Exit. We just play. And whatever develops. Now, we just finished a record that hopefully will be out soon. It was the first studio date for Last Exit. And it was done the same way, just free improvisation, but it was done layers. As far as there was no time when all four of us were in the studio together. We would listen to what had developed and then think about it, but go in and improvise something on top of that. But it was... You know, it took a bit more thought than you have a chance to get on stage, but that's it, you know. But it's an improvisational band. And, you know, with very good musicians, you can pull that off.
What's the name of this new album, and when will it be out?
I have no idea about any of that.
Okay.
But I hope soon, because it's very good.
All right, there were only three previous, I take it, right?
Yeah.
Those are the three I have.
There's another one that's been released in Europe called the cassette recording.
I have that one, too.
Okay, you're counting that as a three.
Right.
Yeah, okay, that's it.
Okay, I have those. I'd like to ask you how you compare the difference between Last Exit and your own band, the Sonny Sharrock Band, that recorded Seize the Rainbow. How do you approach the two different bands, and what is your role in each band?
Yeah, well, it's the amount of structure that makes the difference. In Last Exit, like I say, it's an improvisational band, and we just go out and we play. We've never had a rehearsal. In my band, I'm using my own compositions, and it's very important to me that these compositions be a springboard to my improvisation. So I've rehearsed my band, like before we did that record. I formed the band right before we did the record, and we had two rehearsals, and we went and recorded the record in one day. But there was that, you know, that one, those two rehearsals or whatever. And there is more structure. And I'm more in charge of the total direction of the band. And Last Exit, I do what I do, and when I'm doing it and I feel like being out front and I bring myself out front, then I am in charge generally of what's happening. And it goes like that with each member. But in my quartet, I am pretty much in charge of the whole structure, you know, and I try to keep more structure than with Last Exit.
Okay, Mr. Knuth mentioned an album to me that you just released called Guitar, and it's a solo guitar album,
right,
which I haven't had the pleasure of hearing yet, but which I plan on picking up before the program goes on air. Could you tell me a little bit about that album?
Okay, that was something that I really didn't want to do. That was the first record I had done as a leader in 12 years, and we had just finished the first Last Exit tour in Europe, and Bill Laswell said to me, why don't you do a solo guitar record? And I feel those things are kind of deadly. They bore the shit out of me. I'm sorry, this is radio, isn't it? You can bleep that.
But that's okay.
They bore me terribly after the first 3 minutes. But okay, I went in, I wrote the music like the day before, and I went in the studio, and I recorded the whole thing in one day. But again, I like to work fast in the studio, and with Bill Laswell, you can do that because he really knows what he's doing in the studio. But the thing is that I did it in overdubs here. I think most of the time it's one overdub and one solo. So I laid down the overdub tracks and then I did my solos on top of it. And I tried to keep it as loose and free as possible, but with some structure. But for the first time in the studio, I think on that album, I reached the things that I was hearing in my head all of those years. And that, for me, was the beginning of the new era.
Speaking of a new era, I'd like to ask you a question that I also asked Mr. Jackson. According to Wayne Shorter, a new avant-garde is not necessary every decade, but only when needed and when the culture is ready for it. Do you feel like a new avant-garde is coming on, something like a controlled version of the 60s in the 80s and 90s? Because this seems to be evident on Last Exit.
I love Wayne. He's a good friend, but let me just say one thing about what he said. I don't think it's when the culture is ready for it. I think it's when the artists are ready for it. Then it develops. And there seems to be, right now, a need for artists to stand again and to create. There's so much jive music happening that there, and I'm not saying that Last Exit is taking care of all of that or that me and my solo projects are doing that, but I do feel a need to try to bring change about again and to make people aware that music, you know, is a passionate, growing thing and not just something dead or something that you listen to while you eat dinner.
Okay, thanks. One album I did get hold of, and I don't know how you feel about this album. It was an album that you did back in 1975 called Paradise.
Paradise, yeah.
It's the only album I've been able to get hold of besides the new ones.
Yeah.
And since I've got that to use as material, could you tell me a little bit about that one?
Okay, now that was just about the period where I decided that things weren't going the way I wanted them to go. The first album I had done, like I think it was like 3 to 5 years before Paradise, was called Black Woman. And that was the direction that I was heading in. That was my first album. But by the time I reached Paradise, I saw a lot of elements in the music that I wasn't happy with. It seemed that I was going more for formula than I was for art. And so that, a couple of years after that, was when I did drop out. Some of the music is very nice. I think the band sucks. But the music, some of the compositional things are kind of nice. It's an old record, and it's an old time, and I guess as a history lesson, it should be listened to maybe as a direction not to go. You know.
Okay, thanks. Could you tell me a little bit about, for you personally, what kind of live gigs will be coming up across the country or anywhere out of the country, and what you're doing with yourself as the future goes?
Okay, I'm going to be going back into the Knitting Factory. I did a gig in New York City. I did a gig there in April or May, somewhere, April or May, and I'm going back in there on August 4th for one night and with my quartet, and then there's a European tour for my quartet being set up in the middle of October. We'll be there for about 3 weeks, and it'll be our first extended tour. We did like 3 nights in Europe last October, and we've only worked like 4 gigs with the quartet, but hopefully things are going to start rolling now. We're going to be a lot busier. I hope so.
Okay, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about Last Exit. These are also some questions that I also asked Ronald, and you know, it'll be very interesting to compare some of the answers.
I'm sure.
Because I'm going to do the, when I do the program, it'll be, you know, both of you together.
Right.
It seems that the second and third Last Exit albums have been more focused than the first, and it sounds like the members of the bands are improvising better with each other. How is this true, and why, and how is the chemistry still working out?
Okay, we, the first album was done after our first tour. The band was formed on stage the first night of the tour. We had never, all four of us, played together in any situation. And we set up this European tour, and we walked out on stage, and we played. A week later, we recorded the first album on stage in Paris. We didn't plan it as a recording. They just recorded. We planned to record it, but I mean, we just went out to do a concert. We played. That was the first record. Okay. Now, the second record we did in Tokyo, and it was a planned recording. We knew we were going to be recording, but still, the group was growing. This was a year later, 6 months later or something. And the cassette recordings are taken from tours, different tours. We toured Europe in the first 2 years quite a bit, and the cassette recordings are taken from live dates we did there. Now, as you say, the focus... the structure has gotten a bit tighter, and the focus is more clear. And I think that happens with any band, and especially with creative, good musicians. It's got to happen. Otherwise, it's not a band, you know. And what that seems to be happening now, and especially with the new record, I think it's, you know, it's really way up there. It's very focused, and the relationship of the guys in the band is great, as it always have been. We enjoy being with each other, and we enjoy playing together. And I think that's, you know, that's crucial. Because we never worry about music, because we know what we can do musically, and we all respect each other musically. So we never even discuss music. It's a band that never talks about... I've been backstage and heard bands come up and say, yeah, did you like what I did? We never do that kind of shit. We just play, you know, and we know we can play, so we play. And there's never a discussion of music. We're usually talking about where we're going to eat dinner, and, you know, that's more important to talk about. When we make music, we talk in that way. And I think Last Exit is forever, it seems to be, because there's no need to not do it. It doesn't get in the way of any of our solo projects, and we enjoy being together. So we do it a few times a year, and it's great.
Well, thanks a lot. That was a great answer. Well, to wrap things up, could you just tell me if there's anything else you'd like to add for our Midwestern listening audience that may not understand the music, and if there's anything else you'd like to mention of some music that I've mentioned or not mentioned, if you'd like to talk about anything else.
Yeah, for your Midwest audience who may not understand the music, I think that's an old way of thinking. When I first came on the scene, they didn't understand me in New York and London, you know. So, I mean, now in the Midwest, they're listening to Last Exit and to my records. I think they understand already. And just, you know, you listen from inside. You don't, you know, don't bring a whole lot of jive to your listening, you know, like you have to listen to this because it is this. It's best just to listen. That's how I listen to music. I don't have any, you know, idea that these people can't hear what's going on. I think they hear it. It's that simple.
Okay, thanks. Okay. What is the date of that August gig you have in New York?
August 4th.
August 4th?
Yeah.
All right.
The Knitting Factory sends out a tape to different radio stations around the country. You may want to get in touch with them because they did the last gig I did there. It was broadcast around the country on different stations, on a lot of, you know, in a lot of markets, so they do send out a tape. I don't know if you can get in touch with them and find out what the deal is with that.
Okay, I might do that. Yeah, if I'm in town, I'd really like to come see you play.
Yeah, well, do that too.
Okay. All right, well, thanks a lot for the interview, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Is there an address that you'd like me to send the program to when it's all done? It'll be done this fall.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. P.O. Box 561 Ossining, that's O-S-S-I-N ING, New York, 10562.
Okay, I'll send you a copy of the tape when it's all done so you can hear what the program will sound like when it's aired. It'll probably be broadcast in September.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that.
Okay?
Okay.
And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.